Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Hello from Taiwan. My wife Katie and I made it here a little bit over a week ago. I'm sorry, folks, I've got a bit of a scratchy throat today. Not a full-on cold or anything, but it's just a bit of an annoyance. So sorry if I sound a little bit different, but we made it here a bit over a week ago from China. God, so much has happened since I recorded the last podcast. I don't even know where to begin talking about it. But I'll have to save that for later. Maybe I'll tell the story of our first week or so bicycling in Taiwan. Just getting here was a big adventure. For today, though, I'm going to take you through my last podcast that I recorded about Japan. Katie and I squeezed in a little bit of time while we were on the ship heading from Japan to Shanghai, and we just gave our thoughts about the country. Luckily, I'm glad we did this because Japan was fresh on our minds at the time, and now it's been a week or whatever, and we're already completely thinking about other things. It feels like a long time ago that I was in Japan. So we're gonna go back to the past and hear what we thought, all the good and bad stuff. And I think we gave a lot of good tips about how to get around, whether it be by bicycle as we did, or if you're just traveling there under more conventional means. I think you'll get a lot out of this one, and we're going to get into that in just a minute. But first, I want to talk about my new book, 1,000 Days Between Part 2. It's over. It's finally finished. I uploaded it to Amazon, put the final touches on it. You can get it. I don't quite have the link yet, but I'll put it on my website. If you just go on Amazon, by the time this comes out, it'll be done. So go on Amazon, search for 1,000 Days Between Part 2, and you'll find my book. For those of you who don't know me, I took this long trip, 1,000 days, in fact, while I was in my 20s, and I traveled around South America. And then I came home, and a lot of people said to me, "Hey, man, you have some good stories. You should write a book." And I, at the time, I just thought, "Yeah, what the hell? Why? I'll give it a shot. Sure, why not?" I had no idea how to write, though. That's not my profession at all. And I spent a couple years just trying to put this all together in some kind of cohesive format. And then I started sending out my writing to other people in Madison, Wisconsin, and we'd meet up and they'd critique me. And at first, the stuff I sent in was just full of black marks. I had to change everything. So I kept working at it, though. And I think I've been working on it for like 8 years now, which is crazy to think about. The whole trip that I wrote about only lasted like 2.5 years, and then it took me 8 more years to write about it. It's almost my entire 30s I've spent just on this one project, and now it's over. So part one, I finished a few years ago, and that takes you from a time where I was working as a software engineer, not really satisfied with my life, and I decided to just quit, leave everything, and buy a one-way ticket for South America. So I spent a few years traveling around. And the beginning of the second book, really I was just doing the normal backpacker, the beginning of the first book, I was just doing the normal backpacker stuff. And I moved on to more and more adventurous things. The second book, I think you'll see, it's almost just pure adventure. I got really into just doing outdoorsy stuff as I continued traveling. The second book is, I'm really happy with it right now. I hope you'll like it too. I don't have much more to say right now. I really appreciate all of your support along the way. I know it took me a very long time. I'm going to give you guys in future episodes of this podcast, maybe I'll talk about the book a little bit more, maybe some specific chapters or something. I don't know. I'll have to think about it. But for right now, just letting you know that it's out there and available on Amazon. Go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com, and I'll have a link all ready for you. And now let's listen to my podcast with my wife, Katie, as we talk about all of the highs and lows, the ups and downs of traveling through Japan for 1 month. Sakatumi.
Your favorite thing to say in Japan.
Yeah, we're drinking sake. Are you sick of that now, of me saying that?
I'm getting pretty sick of it.
All right.
Usually I thoroughly enjoy your puns, but you've been saying that one almost every day.
A lot, yeah. Yeah, so, this might be the last night where I get to use it, though, so you got to give me a little leeway here.
All right.
So
sake away.
Sake to me. We're going to talk about Japan.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, we're on this boat heading to Shanghai. Tomorrow we'll be in China. So this is, I mean, perfect time to do it.
Yeah, it's nice to have some time after a trip always to reflect on how things went. And I think that this boat is the perfect way to do that because we have 2 solid days on the boat to kind of gather our thoughts and relax a little bit and kind of take a weekend off from traveling.
Right. Yeah, why can't every country be an island nation that's like 2 days by boat away from the mainland?
Yeah, right?
That's great.
It is pretty nice. And I really appreciate that this it's been pretty empty this time. So we have all these spaces that we can use, like this tatami mat room and the reading room and the public bath on the boat, and all those places are nice and quiet, which is nice.
Yeah, Philippe and I were actually just talking earlier today. It'd be nice to have a few more people, we think, which is a weird thing to ask for. But
yeah, it's true.
It just feels too empty. Like we're almost taking advantage of the boat or something.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But yeah, I kind of felt like when we got on the boat, though, a little bittersweet. Like I'm also, the month in Japan while biking didn't seem like it was going that fast, but now at the end, it's like, dang, it's already over. And I feel a little sad that it's over and we're leaving, but I'm also excited to go to Taiwan. And I'm also excited to have 2 days of rest, which we didn't take a whole lot of actual rest days.
No, we said we were gonna take a rest day, and then we biked 30 or 40 kilometers.
Well, what happens when you bike somewhere is you take a rest day, but then on that rest day, we wanted to go to an onsen nearby.
Yeah.
Well, and that was like 15 kilometers away or 10 kilometers away. So then you bike there and bike to the grocery store and get some food and, you know. But those rest days, quote unquote, were without our gear on the bikes usually. So that was a little bit easier.
Makes a huge difference going up those hills without any weight on the bike.
Right. So.
Yeah. But it does take a lot of effort to get some rest and relaxation. It's very hard work when you're bike touring.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. It's even just biking 20 kilometers seems like an easy day, so it's not like it's a big deal.
Right. I find the days go by real slow when you're doing something like that, but then the weeks go by fast, the months go by fast.
Yeah, that's true.
It's hard to believe we've almost been on the road 4 months now.
Yeah, that is.
So. Yeah, but we've got a lot of good stuff coming up.
Yeah, we do. So, yeah, I think there are so many great things about biking in Japan. If you want to do a bike tour, I think Japan is a great place for it, for a lot of good reasons. And I think, you know, one, it's beautiful, and there's a lot of nature. but a couple of the other things are definitely that it's very convenient. You don't really need to, a lot of, we both kind of struggle with this, I think, with, we have this backpacker mentality of, hey, we're going to go backpacking for a 4-day trip or a 6-day trip or whatever, and we need to bring X amount of food, this many days of coffee or oatmeal or food, and we're getting it all planned out, and we have a route in mind, and we have it mapped out, and like, that's what we're used to. And this is our first time being a bike tour, and that was a huge change for me, was like, oh, like, we're just mapping things out on the fly some days, being like, oh, well, let's actually go this way instead, or whatever, and yeah. There's so many 7-Elevens and Lawson's and Family Marts and grocery stores along the way that you really don't need to carry all your food. But then occasionally you are kind of in a remote place and there isn't something right there. So you kind of, it's a bit tricky. It's a bit tricky to find that balance, really.
Right. Oh, we're getting an announcement on the ship. I think the cafeteria is closing. Dinner's almost over.
And you're welcome.
These announcements, they always do Chinese first, and now she's going to do in Japanese. And then finally they say it in English, and at the end they always say, you're welcome, thank you. Let's see if they do it.
There it is.
The duty-free shop is open. So so somebody's got to go tell them that it's rude to say you're welcome in English like that without somebody thanking them first. Like, the duty-free shop is open. You're welcome.
Like, yeah.
They don't realize that's rude. So what were we talking about? The convenience. Like, it took me about 2 days before I realized, like, oh, we don't need to bring a week's worth of food with us. We can just get food every day.
Right. Yeah? Right. And it just, oh, here we go again. It's just hard for us to let that go. It's like a mentality we're so used to having, a fear of not having enough food.
Yep.
When you're doing an outdoor trip, that it's hard to let it go mentally for me.
Yeah, that scarcity mindset is what I have too. Water too. I always thought, like, oh, I've got to carry like 4 liters on me because who knows, we might not find water for all day. And then first of all, it's not that hot, so I wasn't drinking that much water. I only needed like a liter a day.
Yeah.
And then, okay, now the restaurant's closed. That's the announcement here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, let's give it a second to end. Oh, she only said thank you. Oh, maybe she heard us. I want her.
All right.
So my first instincts are to cut that out. Like, don't put it in the final podcast, but I think it'll sound pretty good.
All right.
Yeah. All right.
So anyway, as we're saying, yeah, it took us a bit for us to transition into mentally not always having to keep the water and the food on us, which is a bit of a shift because, you know, Japan does have a lot of people that are, and that, of course, depends on where you're biking in Japan. Maybe in Hokkaido it would be different, but we were biking through even constant villages, even if they were small little villages, we still were seeing constant towns or villages. It wasn't like we were ever really, truly, completely secluded.
Yeah, a lot bigger population than I'm used to seeing with hiking. Usually when you're hiking, you want to get completely away from the people, so it makes more sense that you wouldn't see a convenience store along the way. But biking, you're on roads, and where there's roads, there's people. So looking back, it makes perfect sense.
But with those convenience things, I think that is one of the key characteristics about Japan, is that things are super convenient. And so first of all, there's the convenience stores that we just talked about. So if we are biking and we need to go to the bathroom, no problem. Every convenience store has a clean bathroom, most of the time with a bidet, a heated bidet sometimes.
Yeah, we should talk about the toilets more
in
depth.
And maybe even an ass dryer.
Yeah.
If, like, it's crazy. I just wouldn't expect to see that. Maybe in, like, a nice hotel or a nice restaurant or somebody's home, but, like, not in the 7-Eleven.
Right. Right.
That was surprising for me.
You push a button. The thing is, you sit down and, like, first of all, the seat's warm, so your ass is nice and warm.
And you can clean the seat beforehand if you want to. It's got a cleaning spray you can wipe it down with. It's all planned out and thought out well.
But then before you start doing anything, you can push a button and music comes on, or like flushing sounds come on.
Right.
So no one can hear you pooping. And then you do your thing, and then you push a button, and then the spray comes, and it's warm water, just shoots right into your ass. And you can control how hard the spray is, too. You can turn it up or down. Then for women...
They have a women and a men's spray button.
For women, there's a front spray, too, which is, like, really... Oh, it's, like, really convenient. And then afterwards, they've got the dryer.
Not all. Only a few of them do.
Oh, okay.
It's not very often. I only saw it a few times. But
you know what the really bad thing is, though? Toilet paper.
Is so thin and shitty.
It's, yeah, pardon the pun. It's the worst toilet paper I've ever encountered. And it's in this country
Maybe that's because you're using the bidet, so you shouldn't need as much.
Yeah, maybe they just don't use toilet paper here. You just don't really need it then.
That could be it. I'm not sure all of that, but...
it's unbelievable, though. I mean,
and you know what else is super surprising is one of the nicest bidets that I saw was one of the parks that we camped in for free. It was parked in a public park in a city, and the handicapped bathroom was like one of the nicest bidets that I saw. And I was like, whoa, this is weird. This is in a public park, you know?
Yeah, it's unreal. Unreal. And then, oh, here's the other thing. I've never seen this before, but it's a good idea. When you flush the toilet, instead of just the tank filling up with water and you don't see the tank filling up with water, there's a faucet. So the tank first comes out of a faucet. So it's basically a sink. It's a little hard to describe this, but then it empties into the tank. So first you can wash your hands when you're still at the toilet.
Yeah, I didn't really think of that until you mentioned that like 2 days ago. I didn't realize that's what that was for.
Yeah, it's just this little addition.
But then bathrooms that have a hand washing right outside of it don't always have that.
Right, not always. But yeah. it's this little, it would cost like 5 cents to do this. It's just a little faucet on top of the porcelain.
I think what happens is often, so the style of the bathrooms here is different. So the toilet is not in the same room as the shower. So the bathroom basically has a room that has usually a faucet. And a sink with a mirror that's in one room connected to the shower. And the shower room has a little stool that you sit on and a shower in it, and then next to that is the bathtub. So that's one part of the bathroom. And then the second room, sometimes next to that room, sometimes further down the hallway or
on a different floor sometimes.
Or on a different floor in a house is the toilet. And so I think maybe that's why that, I don't know, I have to ask a Japanese person the ins and outs of how toilets work in their country,
right.
Because, which is hilarious, like that Mr. Baseball movie you brought up, that,
yeah.
You know, like, duh, I don't need you to tell me how the bathrooms work here. I'm an adult, I know how to go to the bathroom. But then you get here and you're like, well, can
I
wash my
crap?
Hands here? Do I do this here? Like, where?
Right.
Well, how did this work, you know? And. I'm not sure if I told you this, but I listened to a podcast about Freakonomics. They had an episode called Take Back the Toilet.
Yeah.
And he talked about that, about how, you know, music and different options. And it's like, dang, Japan thought all that through.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we could talk about toilets forever. Just they're so different depending on where you go.
Yeah, that's true.
And the levels of privacy.
But it's really nice at the... bike touring person, like, you don't have to look for a bathroom. Like, we're biking along, doing our thing. You can just, you know, there's two extremes you've had already. There's Mongolia, which you can just go to the bathroom anywhere. The whole of Mongolia is your bathroom.
Yep.
And then there's Japan, where you definitely may not go to the bathroom out in the open, but you don't need to because there's a 7-Eleven or Lawson's or a Family Mart everywhere. So that was kind of interesting if you think about the contrast between places, which I love. I love comparing and contrasting places.
Well,
and
big part of travel.
There you go for bathroom. That was Japan definitely had the convenience issue. The convenience and the cleanliness.
Oh, so clean. Unbelievably clean.
And, you know, we're used to be living in China and being in China. Like, Japan and China could not be more opposite in the bathroom spectrum.
Definitely. Yeah. So we'll move on. Next thing I wrote down was, let's just talk about camping a bit. You talked about it a little bit, but Japan is probably the best
most easiest place I've ever found for camping. You can just camp in any public park, pretty much, and no one really cares.
I don't think it's something that the Japanese would do, just camp in a park, like, unless, you know, some people maybe would, but it's, if you do it, it's okay. It's not going to be, you're not going to get in trouble. The police aren't going to bother you. And we had read several biker blogs that had suggested that you can just camp in a park, but, you know, you just don't set up at, like, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, obviously. You kind of wait until dark and set up and whatever.
But in a developed country where getting a hotel is just prohibitively expensive if you're on a long trip, I mean, you can't just pay $100 a night every night for a hotel.
Right.
Not if you're traveling for a year and you have any sort of budget.
Right.
Camping for free is just such a great option, and I'm really happy that it's
available. And we did find a lot of campsites along the way that we, you know, we always search, like, is there a campsite? Because then we know we can set up right away. And some campsites were 200 yen, super cheap. Others were free. Our favorite campsite, the last time we did a podcast, was at a free campsite, which we stayed at for 2 nights. Just super nice. Clean toilets, nice cooking area, places to sit, beautiful spot for free. And then others, actually our worst campsite was one that we paid for that had all these different spaces. It's just interesting how the range of prices for free to, $16 a night was the range that we paid, but then there are other places that we didn't stay at that were more expensive than that. And that was kind of surprising to me, I guess.
Right. We went to one campsite, and they were like, okay, that'll be $40 for you guys to sleep here. So we were like, nah, we're not going to pay that. So we left, and we just camped for free.
And somewhere else, yeah.
Yeah, with all the same conveniences that this campground would have had. So we've noticed, I think to sum it up, we've noticed that the amount you pay for camping in Japan has absolutely nothing to do with the quality of the campground that you'll find.
Right. And I wonder, too, if there's a better resource. Like, we kind of just would use Google and find parks and find campgrounds listed on Google. Like, I wonder if there's... I know that some of the psycho websites have... Some people have gone and put some campgrounds in there, but...
Oh, all right. Well, sometimes we just pull up a town and just look for parks in it, and then
that's what most of it
see if there's a river running through it, and if there is, then just go to the river. There's usually a good spot there.
But I think that the wild campgrounds and those things were pretty prevalent. It wasn't... It's not like we're on some route where it's marked, like, here's the campsite, you know, like, a lot of, like, backpackers or travelers will take these routes where they're, like, they know where they're going to camp each night. Like, that was kind of one of our tasks each day. One of our tasks that we had to spend some time on was finding, you know, that the night before, I would look on Google and kind of be like, okay, this is where I think we're going to go tomorrow, and I would start looking for parks, and I would mark, one thing that I learned on this trip that I hadn't really done before is on Google you can hit the flag and you can mark them with a pin, and there's a little flag button that says save.
All right.
You can put a heart, a star, or like a want to go on it. And so I used that to help me kind of scout out places the day or two before we were going to a place. And then we could kind of say, like, as we're riding, like, oh, like, we're going 40 kilometers, let's keep going. Oh, look ahead, there's 20 kilometers more, there's a campsite, we'll bike to that today. And sometimes we say we want to have a longer day, and so we can kind of project how many kilometers we had ahead of us, or doing that by scouting out the campsites or parks that would be potential campsites along the way.
Right. But I imagine in a lot of countries, if you're bike touring, especially if in populated areas, you're going to be really concerned about finding that campground, like, or not being able to find one.
Right.
In Japan, that was never an issue.
That's true.
Because even if we had nothing planned at all and it got dark, we would just find a place and just camp there.
Every town, every village. Well, this is one thing that I noticed when I was going through some of the villages, though. Some of the smaller villages are a bit more worried because some of the villages didn't have... The cities and the towns had parks.
Yeah, always.
But some of the villages were all farms.
Right.
There it might be helpful to know a little bit of Japanese and be able to say to the farmer, like, hey, can I camp here?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to camp on somebody's farmland. And all the land, there seemed to be extra land that was all used for farming.
Right. So it's paradoxical, but actually going to a more populated place is nicer for camping in that regard.
Yeah.
You'd think that the little towns would be the best place, but not necessarily.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in following some more, you know, bike touring blogs and kind of seeing other places that people have gone to and places that they've enjoyed, because I definitely want to do a bike tour again. This is something that I definitely enjoyed, and you know, you met people in Yunnan who were in their 60s and they're bike touring, and I think, you know, ultimate frisbee is not something I'm going to do forever, but bike touring is something that I think that I can do, you know, at 40, at 50, at 60, and I want to continue to do trips like this.
Many advantages to it.
So I mean, this is our first one. So
it's great exercise. It's not hard on your body. You know, you get free transportation.
Yeah.
You can camp. Yeah, it's great. And I wouldn't do it all over the whole world, but yeah, in certain countries, I think.
Yeah, and I don't know if really people do it for a whole year. That could be a bit much.
Yeah.
But especially since I think both you and I are people who like a variety of activities. Mm-hmm. Like, biking is awesome, but I also like other things. So that's kind of nice about this trip, that we're mixing up, like, different outdoor adventures. We're not only going to be hiking. We're not only going to be biking. We're going to be doing a couple different of our passions this year, which is good.
Yeah, one problem with biking is definitely that we'd see some really cool site, like a nice temple or a hill with a good lookout on top, and we'd go, I don't think I can walk to the top of that. Because we're just tired from biking all day.
Yeah, and so you are spending the majority of your day on transportation.
Yeah.
So that means that you either have to take a short day and have a half day riding and a half day doing toury things, which we did that several times. We had a couple days where we're like, okay, in this town, we want to see this temple and this shrine and this garden. So we're just going to ride for like 40 kilometers today or 50 kilometers today, and we're just going to do 3 hours checking out these sites. That definitely happened, but yeah, you know, when the majority of your time is transporting, you can't hit up every tourist site. You just got to skip some. And usually the ones at the top of the hill, those are the ones for skipping.
Yeah.
You know, well, I think in the beginning, I felt really good. And in the middle, I was like, ooh, my legs are feeling a little tight. And then toward the end, my body just started getting used to it. So
right. When we were in the middle, we were on that island, and there was a good lookout point at the top. I mean, we walked up one flight of stairs, and I was like, I can barely make it up these stairs. My legs are so sore. I don't know if I could do this. Normally, I'd have absolutely no problem at all.
But walking on flat ground was fine.
Yeah, that was fine.
And biking was fine. I wasn't sore when I was biking. I wasn't sore when I was walking on flat ground. But when I was biking up a hill or walking up a hill, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. There's my muscle. I can feel all the parts.
We've been doing some work.
So, yeah, I think, you know, one, for biking, Japan is convenient. There's good convenience stores. Two, camping was easy to find and, you know, flexible, because you can camp in public parks, and public parks have nice bathrooms and usually a shelter to cook underneath if you have a stove. And three, the best thing is onsen or sento.
Ah, right.
Like, what other country do you know of that you can show up into a town, do a Google search for public bath, and find the bathing culture here? That they're, you know, one of our friends explained to us, maybe it's part of the Shinto faith, that they're very clean and they're very ritualistic. So they have some very interesting bathing rituals, and so because of that, and because not all places used to have bathrooms, now more and more, you know, homes have modernized, but and have their own private bathroom. But most towns have, if not hot spring heated onsen, they have a public bath that they call sento, and that is great, that you can go and get clean and sit in a hot tub, and they're cheap. From $1 to $5 usually. Yeah. And that gets you, $5 gets you into a nice one.
Yeah. They'll give you a towel, they'll give you a nice several hot tubs to go in.
Some have shampoo and conditioner.
Yeah, for free. They give you...
Some don't. I mean, some are you need to bring your own. The cheaper one, like the 100 and 300 ones, you want to bring your own towel. You can buy one or rent one for an additional cost, but...
One of them we went to was only $3, and at the end, we got to go into a nice room, and it's split up by gender, so we don't see each other. Afterwards, we can meet in this common room and have a cup of tea for free and have a chat, charge our stuff.
Yep.
$3. We sat there for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic.
Which is especially nice because the sun goes down at 5:30 and there's not really a whole lot to do other than cook dinner and like sit in your tent from 5:30 until 8:30 or 9 when I'm falling asleep.
Right.
Because I was falling asleep pretty early. We were pretty beat from biking all day.
Right.
So
the biking was great. Let's talk about food.
Also convenient.
Okay.
I think Japan, the downside is restaurants are expensive.
Yep.
And the other downside is that these restaurants are not made for big guys like you. You like to eat a big plate of food on a normal day when you're not exercising and working out. But when you're biking, like, you want a big guy portion of food. And you, and I kind of do too on those days. I want a big portion of food as well. And kind of what's frustrating me, usually we'd eat out once a day and then cook breakfast and cook dinner, you know, on our stove, right? But sometimes we would eat out and be like still hungry afterwards, and that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple nights ago we went out to eat and spent, I mean, not a ton of money.
It was our last night in Japan, so we went to a nice, you know, a nice place.
Decent place. Not like super high end or anything, but decent place. We spent like $22 each, but we both walked out of there afterwards and we're like, oh, I'm starving. Let's go get some more food.
So we had to go to the grocery store and get some bento boxes.
Yeah.
So that's a downside. But not everybody maybe eats as much food as we do. That's probably why people are skinnier here. Because
definitely.
You know what? As an American culture, we tend to over... That's one of the reasons why we are bigger than other people, I think. And we tend to have more obesity is our portion sizes are way out of control. And we are conditioned to eat bigger portions of the food.
But I need it, man. I mean, Japan just has small people, and they have small homes, and they have small spaces, and small doorways that I hit my head on. There's not enough room to sit, to roll around in bed. Like, everything's tinier. And then the food is just, it's like a Easy Bake Oven size. It's all tiny. I can't believe how small the portions are. I'm just constantly saying, how are you still alive when this is all you eat? This is like 100 calories. And like, you're not going to eat anything else? You're just going to eat that? Really? I can't believe it. So it's tough. If you have a big appetite.
Well, and I think what they do.
It's hard to stay full.
When we visited our friend Dave in Kyoto, he said, you know, they will go to like 2 to 4 restaurants in the evening.
I know, but...
But then they're spending a lot more money than we want to spend, and we don't want to do that. We want to, like, fill up, go back to our tent and crash, you know. Anyway, so that being said, that's the rough part about the food. But the good part about the food is there's so many good foods in here in Japan. They really value good food. They value, you know, good quality food. And the ramen restaurants are amazing. That's delicious.
Right.
Udon noodles are delicious. And sometimes it's just pork or chicken, and other times it's just seafood. And then they put the tempura in it, and it's delicious. The grilled skewers of meat, the yakitori, that's delicious. The sushi is... Some of the fish, the sushi fish, like, just melts in your mouth. The fish is so soft. It's like,
I don't know how they do it.
Fish butter.
It's not even cooked. They just chop up a fish, throw it on your plate.
Well, it's fresh. Like, we're used to eating sushi in Wisconsin, which is like...
Well, yeah. Don't eat sushi far from the ocean. That's your lesson.
Right.
When you're right on the ocean, though. Man, that stuff... I can't believe all of that is raw fish, and it just it can
so
taste
good.
That good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. But you know, there, I thought that I would have. I was expecting, of all the places we've been to, that I would eat the healthiest in Japan. And no way. I've eaten the worst here, actually. And part of that is because after a day of biking, I don't really want, even though I love sushi, and don't get me wrong, I love sushi, I'm just not in the mood for, like, a bunch of raw fish after a long day of biking. Like, I want a warm, hot, filling meal.
Yeah, or you could eat raw fish, but you'd have to eat a lot of it.
Well, I mean, you can eat the ones with rice. The rice fills you up, you know, but it's not really that healthy to eat that much white rice.
Right.
You know, like, they'll usually eat, like, grilled fish or raw fish and, you know, a few pieces with rice, but it's healthier to just eat the fish sashimi style, right?
Sure.
Than it is to eat all the rice with it. Anyway, so that was one thing that I just like, man, I want to eat all the seafood here. But after biking, I kind of want food.
Yeah. Fried chicken.
Fried chicken. And that's what we ate a lot of.
We ate a lot of fried chicken.
You know what? You're biking and you have to stop at 7-Eleven to go to the bathroom. And then when you stop at 7-Eleven to go to the bathroom, you smell fried chicken. And you're like, hey, how about a midday snack? And some days we can resist. And we're like, nope. I've already got snacks. I've got carrots, and I've got edamame, and I've got, you know, these snacks in here. And then other days you're like, but there's fried chicken.
Yeah.
And we can get a few pieces of the fried chicken. And that just hits the spot.
Yeah, 7-Eleven is brilliant. It's just such a brilliant model because they give you the toilets, as we mentioned, with the warm seat and the bidet and, like, all the – it's just such a good feeling. And they give that to you for free, and they don't care that you come in and don't buy anything. You just go use their toilet. And then they give you an ATM, and you can withdraw money, and they don't charge you anything. And it's like, yes. Oh, and the ATM is like playing a game. It's like every time you move to a new menu, it plays a little music for you. And it gives you like a little cartoon on the screen. It's truly amazing. It's like fun. It's fun to take out your money.
Yeah.
But then you smell the chicken. That probably isn't even a real smell. It's probably like the shopping malls where they pipe it in.
Aromatherapy smell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so that was rough with this chicken. And then the other thing that was hard for me to, like, you know, eat healthy, and I really value eating healthy and all this stuff, was they have so many tasty sweets. And one day I made the mistake of trying this cream puff, like, thing. And that was the end of me, because then I was like, they have cream puffs. And these cream puffs are just delicious cream puffs. And it's like memories of the Wisconsin State Fair cream puffs, you know? And there they are in every 7-Eleven. And In China, I never ate stuff from 7-Eleven, ever, or Family Mart, ever, ever. Like, and even at home in the U.S. or in China, like, I kept healthy snacks at home, like, no problem. But man, when we're biking and constantly going in these convenience stores, that was a food thing that just got me in trouble. But whatever.
Sure.
We needed to burn calories, and I don't think I didn't put on any weight or anything, so whatever. And even if I did, it was worth it. I don't really care. I don't really care.
Totally.
I think also for food, here's a couple other really good things about food in Japan. And also, along with the convenience factor, is that one thing that we often did was stop at a grocery store because they often had a sitting area, so we could charge up, and one of us goes shopping, the other one monitors the devices that are being charged, and the grocery store, actually, I think we've got to take a picture of this. I told my dad to take a picture for him, but it was like a massive, huge section, one whole section of, like, you know, fish in a little package for you to take and go and eat for lunch or dinner. And another huge section on, like, you know, little vegetables and things. And a huge section of, like, a buffet of fried things. Vegetables that have been fried in batter, potatoes have been fried in batter, shrimp or fish have been fried in batter. then a section of fried chicken, and then a huge section of bento boxes. And a bento box is like a combination meal. So it could be curry, it could be, you know, a mixture of like little, some rice and some meat and some vegetables and, you know, a whole section of those. And those are all usually between $1 to $5 per item. Except for the sushi. The sushi is the most expensive thing that you usually get, the fish. So, you know, those were really convenient to grab for lunch. Cheaper than eating out at a restaurant, gave us a chance to charge our stuff. And then, you know, the other thing that was really great was if we were up late enough or in a bigger city, usually we're in a bigger city, it was more possible, we could go there and later at night, the bento boxes are half price or they take like 20 or 30 yen off. Mm-hmm. And we could buy a couple of those for a late night snack or get a few for lunch the next day.
Although it varies by the supermarket.
That's true.
So some of them, sometimes the supermarket closes at 9. You should look at their closing hours. Like during the day, if you know you're going to be in that area at night, just check out their hours. And if it says they're open till 9, then go there at 8:30. Because all that stuff's going to be half price.
Yeah.
If they're open 24 hours, like we found that last day, I don't know when it goes half off.
We went there at like 9 and it still wasn't even on sale yet.
Nah, but it takes a little while longer.
Yeah, you know, so a lot of the supermarket food, that they're selling the same kind of food that you can get in the restaurant. You know, you can get the cabbage pancake sometimes. You can get a lot of those same food. We had fried oysters one day in a restaurant that was near the ocean, near...
in a supermarket?
Hiroshima. And, like, you can get a lot of those same things in the grocery stores, but it's just half price. And then, you know, yeah, maybe you have to reheat it in the microwave a little bit, so...
But that's the one. That's the one way to get fairly cheap food in Japan. Otherwise, it's pretty expensive to eat here.
Yeah, and the other thing that was fairly cheap was the bakeries. We did a couple times go to a bakery, and I might have talked about this before, but I was surprised at the quality of the bakery and the breads here.
Whew. Much better than China.
Oh, my God. Opposite. You know, it's not ridiculously priced and really fresh and tasty, really high quality, really well done. And a couple times we were able to stop in the morning, like get a mid-morning snack, not the healthiest mid-morning snack, but delicious one, and then grab a few sandwiches for lunch. And the sandwiches were on fresh bread made that day.
Those
really
were good.
Yeah, those were good. And the sandwiches were like $2 to $3 each.
Yeah.
You know, like.
I mean, you need to eat three of them to get full, but you know, they're okay.
Well, but if we're gonna, we went to like lunch out a few days, and it cost us like $10 for lunch.
Yeah, right.
You know, like we had a hard time eating at a restaurant for less than $10. You could just get a plain bowl of ramen for like $500, but...
Well, one thing you should keep in mind, though, is you keep talking about dollars, but what you really mean is 100 yen.
Yeah.
So if we spent 2,000 yen, we both just tend to think of it as $20, because that's easy to remember. But it's actually like 12% cheaper than that.
Oh, I see. Right.
Because the yen is like 88 cents or something.
Yeah.
Or 88 yen to the dollar or whatever.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, overall, the food is really great here. It's just, if you're traveling in Japan, you definitely, whether you're doing it by bike or else in a different way, you don't want to be eating out every night. It's going to get really expensive unless you've really got a high budget and you're really taking a vacation or something. If you're traveling longer term or you want to, you know, even just come here for like a budget trip, you definitely need to kind of think about a way to cook. And, you know, a lot of hotels and guest houses and hostels do have kitchens. And one of the things that we found convenient for camping was pretty awesome, was usually when you buy, we don't eat spaghetti sauce very often when we're backpacking because it comes in a jar. And we don't want to carry a heavy glass jar. Well, in Japan, all of these delicious sauces for cooking are in plastic bag, like plastic pouch, not plastic, but like a sealed bag. So I could buy a bunch of vegetables and buy like a sauce for sauteing cabbage and pork. or buy a bunch of vegetables and buy spaghetti sauce in a pouch. And that was super convenient as well and pretty cheap. They're like $1 or $2 each per package. So that was how we made most of our dinners, and so I really appreciated the convenience of that. And so you kind of want to search for grocery stores, and you're going to want to cook a little bit in your hotel or your hostel if you're on a budget, because eating out 3 meals a day is going to be easily $50 to $60 a day.
Yeah, it'll kill your budget. Yeah.
So.
All right, let's talk about something that I just thought of. Actually, I didn't really write this down beforehand, but just the attention to detail in Japan that you don't see in most countries. It's really amazing how much attention to detail people give with their gardens, right? With their trees.
Yeah, with their sidewalks, with cleaning, the rituals of cleaning the sidewalk or keeping things clean, or
They'll share neighborhood duties for within a neighborhood. They'll share duties for cleaning the sidewalks. It's all we just learned this that it's not even just the government like street cleaner that comes by. It's the people who live there a lot of the time.
Yeah, and I've heard that about schools as well. Is the students take responsibility, like share responsibility for cleaning their classrooms, their schools, and like it's even at the supermarket, you would sit down, there'd often be a little cloth there. I don't know if you noticed this. Right. So somebody would wipe down the space before and after they used it to kind of keep the space in the supermarket sitting area clean for the next person.
It's the cleanest country I've ever been to.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
But that being said, the downside to that, and I think had we not lived in China before here, we maybe wouldn't have noticed this much, but the downside is that I feel like people are more rigid. And clean is great. Clean is really nice. The bathroom being clean is nice. Restaurants and sitting areas being clean is great. You know, like in China, bathrooms are disgusting and smell bad and all this stuff, right? But I feel like if you're going to compare these two cultures, they're so different. And in China, they're more flexible, but sometimes to a degree that really makes things lose quality. They have a, you know, chabdo, like, good enough.
Yeah, they've got this expression
like, that's
in
good
Chinese.
Enough.
Yeah.
You know, and in Japan, it's not like that at all.
It's never good enough.
Right. So it's very specific. They've got rules, and they're going to follow the rules. And as a foreigner, you are definitely given to, like, it's okay, you're a foreigner, you don't know the rules, kind of out. So you are given that. But
it doesn't matter that you're a disgusting pig because you're a foreigner.
But, you know, I did.
But we're
I
still going to look down on you.
We did get yelled at a few times. You know, I got in trouble once in the onsen because I left my towel in my cubby, and I had to walk over to my cubby to get it, and I got part of the floor wet that was outside of the bathing area, and a lady was like, no, no. Like, you know, they use the X sign of their hands. No, no, you can't go here. And I was like, you know, I had read about the onsen rules. I had tried to follow them, you know, because I knew they were particular about things. And, you know, we got in trouble camping one time, too. So they're that part is, you know, it's good to be clean, and it's good to have citizens be responsible and be considerate. So that's the good part. The bad part is just really not very flexible.
Not at all, yeah. But the we haven't really talked about the trees and... You know?
Go ahead.
I mean,
you got to talk about the trees, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they do the topiary with their trees, and they cut out like large chunks of the tree, which I always say kind of jokingly that it's like they're amputating the limbs. It's bad. It's bad for the tree.
And I think it's so cute.
And it is cute. It is cute.
It's like it's just these nice round oval shapes and. Really makes the house look nice, and it's pretty cool.
Right, and I haven't seen anything like this in other countries, so I think Japan has a global hegemony in this area. Oh, sake to you. She wants some sake. All right, last thing we should talk about, and maybe there's a couple others, but we should talk about transportation. Because we've talked about biking a lot because that was our main form of transportation. Right. But we did take one train in Japan.
Yeah, it was fast. It was easy.
On time.
It's on time.
We just had read an article that the Japanese government had to apologize because one of their trains left 20 seconds early.
Right, yeah.
And all these people got really mad. It disrupted their whole day. So that's how rigid they are.
Yeah, it's a little rigid, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we're so sorry about this. Can you imagine Amtrak doing that?
Oh, man.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
The train was really nice. It was expensive, but really nice. But then the ferry
What
network,
I think people do, this is what I've read and heard from others, is that the best tip, if you're going to be traveling into Japan, is to get the rail pass. People said that that's the cheapest way to do it is get the rail pass, and then you use that rail pass to get around.
What does that get you, like unlimited rides?
I'm not exactly sure how it works. So if you're, you know, traveling to Japan, you have to do your research on what that cost and all the details of that. But I think it's unlimited.
Yeah, Philippe was telling me it's easy to hitchhike too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's with a lot of drivers.
Yeah, a lot of people have cars in Japan. Right. Very safe. Very safe country.
Right.
So. People stop for you, I guess.
Yeah.
But the trains, we did one.
There seem to be buses.
There's city
like
buses.
Like city buses. Our friend Dave said that the buses are very good in Kyoto and seem to go to almost all the attractions in Kyoto. We saw people waiting for buses at all the temples we went to and stuff. So that probably is a good option as well.
And we did ride the subway one time as well. Only two stops.
Yeah.
We were on the subway for about 5 minutes. But it was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was clean. Yeah. Nice. No complaints. But the ferry network was what we were really impressed with. That's what we used more.
Right.
I don't remember. We probably counted how many ferries
really
we
really enjoyed riding the ferry, especially if you're biking. It's just so convenient to get on and off. And it's enjoyable. It's like a tourist attraction, you know, because you're seeing, if you're on the coast, you're looking at the ocean and at the water. But if you're on the boat, then you're looking at the coast and you can kind of see the mountains behind it. You can see how big the city is. You can kind of see the scenery. Mm. So it gives you that perspective, which is cool. It's a nice view. Mm. And I honestly, like, even if you don't do a bike tour in Japan and you like biking, I recommend the Shimane Kaido and the Tobishima Kaido. Do one of those. If you do just the Shimane Kaido, you can rent bikes between Imabari and Oma, whatever that town is, I forget. You can rent bikes and you can go across six islands with a rental bike. You can stop halfway and change your mind, take a ferry the rest of the way. So that was really great way to see the bridges and the islands and to use a little bit of your pedal power.
Yeah, that was really great.
Yeah.
And you could always just get on in Imabari, ride all day, and then when you get off the bike, you turn it in, you don't have to ride back, and then you can catch the train from there.
Yep.
So that was good, and Japan has all these little... like several big islands, but then little tiny islands all over the place. And those were fairly populated too.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, if they didn't have bridges connecting them, they had ferries connecting them. And they're running like every hour in many cases, every half hour. And they're cheap.
It's a great way to kind of get to some of the smaller places as well. And not just, you know, but if you're only here for a week or something, then your time is totally going to be taken up with Kyoto or Tokyo or, you know, there's just so many things to do in those cities. Even in Kyoto, I felt a little overwhelmed. There's so many amazing historical places to go to. Right. You just can't do them all, you know?
No, that's kind of always the case. But as always the case, I really enjoyed small
towns.
We
got to see
the countryside.
We got to give our try at geisha spotting. And we were able to see a Zen rock garden, which was, again, really fine detail and some history to that, and also they
reikied the rocks.
Oh, there you go with your puns again. And also, we didn't know how amazing the fall season is here. They have got some beautiful maple trees here in Japan. A bunch of variety that we're not used to seeing in Wisconsin that was just so vibrant, so colorful, and different leaf shapes that were just amazing. I'm excited to see your photos.
So yeah, I was just looking at the ones from when we first got here, and yeah. The maple trees were all green.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And now they're all red or falling off. Yeah, really cool. Really cool trees. And right, what's peak here? End of November?
It's end of November to early December.
Yeah, so a little later than we're used to. But if you've been following us, you know we went through Russia, and we were seeing the fall colors there. That was in like August. The trees
September,
were changing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then September, we went through Mongolia, the trees were changing, and winter was coming, and then
Beijing, we went hiking on the Great Wall, and the leaves were changing.
Yeah.
So this is the longest autumn that I've ever had.
It's like 3 months.
And I love all seasons, but I also, I love fall. It's great temperature, great time for being outdoors. The temperature is just right for being active outside. And, you know, you get somewhere, like we got to Japan and it's still green. There's the anticipation of, oh, we're going to be here for the peak colors. Like it's changing. And you see a little bit changing, but it's not full blown yet. And it's just really, it's really great. So that's kind of, I guess it's over. We're heading to Taiwan next, and that's probably gonna be the end of our autumn.
Yeah, the dream is over. Well, that's all right.
It's okay.
Move on to
warmer
things.
Temperatures.
Yeah, we've been heading south as the temperature drops, and I was a little worried about Japan going there that it'd be too cold. But until the last week, it was totally fine, and even
we did have one night camping at zero.
Yeah, zero Celsius.
Few evenings we've had, you know, hats and gloves on, but
yeah, just the last week it got cold, but not so cold that we couldn't camp, but it's just kind of at that boundary where it's like, well, time to move on.
Yep, speaking of time to move on, I guess it's time for us to wrap this one up and getting a little tired.
Oh, well, you finished your sake.
Yeah, I did.
And I guess it's time to grab another one and move on with our day.
That's right, evening.
All right, folks. Well, I hope you have enjoyed this wrap-up of Japan. And look forward to seeing more stuff from Taiwan coming up. Thank you once again for listening. And thanks to Katie for coming on the show for the third or fourth time, I forget. I hope you enjoyed this episode and look forward to sending you more in the future. As always, if you want more information about this podcast or about any of the projects that I'm working on, including that new book that I just put out, you can go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you next week.